have something coming online in Beta 2 of Orcus that I think ISVs in particular will be very excited about. One of the things that we talked about was the ability for add-ins to version independently of host applications. As part of that, one of the first questions that people then ask is, can I have UI extensibility to my host application in an isolated and version resilient environment? And we've been working on this for quite a while. In part, is something we wanted to think about for WPF, as that was kind of like the next evolution of our forms story. So the scenario would be where I have a host application that's, say, written in WPF or part of it's written in WPF, and I want to extend that host application by allowing third parties to write, you know, pieces of that UI or, you know, controls and contribute that to part of the host application. So you can kind of think of maybe as an example, say, Word, for instance, that has, like, the task pane. So it has a little thing you can kind of, you know, plug into or the help system or something like that. The difficulty with that scenario has been when I want to run this add-in in its own app domain, how do I enable that add-in to have UI communicating across the app domain? And so I can unload that add-in, et cetera, and have, you know, isolation and version resilience, and yet contribute that to the host application. And the good news is, finally, after several years worth of work, coming in beta 2, which you'll see coming out, we've now enabled WPF to have basically like child controls or, you know, child forms in a separate app domain built on the CLR add-in model that's going out in Orcus in order to enable you to have UI composition using WPF. And so this has been just a huge thing that ISVs have been asking for all the way back to WinForms. So I'm going to show you I just installed this and just ran just installed the new version of Orcus. So hopefully so what we have here is kind of just a mock-up kind of calculator application. This is all in WPF, and this is kind of your host application, you know, here. And then every single one of these things that you see in here, you know, stack operation, sample calculator add-in, all of these things are actually running in a separate app domain than the host application. In fact, if we go here and to look at the add-ins, you can actually see each one of these things is in a separate app domain. And you can say, I don't want to load that, I want to unload that, I want to load that and unload that in its own app domain. And that's the beauty of running a separate app domain, is you can unload, reclaim memory, you can have isolation as a result of being in a separate app domain. And so if we just do some kind of, let me reload this whole app here. Okay, so if I just push a few random numbers onto the calculator here, I can, you know, I can add that, I can subtract the two, I can push a few new random ones, and these are multiple add-ins all working with each other and across the host application, which is really cool, all within isolation. So it's that kind of bridging and that communication protocol between these add-ins, and then we can say graph it, and this is in its control is in the add-in, not in the host application, but it's being rendered in the host application. And having that in a separate app domain is something that ISVs have been asking for a really, really long time. The other thing I'm going to show you, now I can't make any guarantees that, you know, this will be, the first implementation of this, you know, how well it will be, you know, richly supported, et cetera. But as I talked about kind of moving pieces of your application over, one of the things that people ask us for is how does WinForms and WPF integrate? And I know that I can't get the functionality where I can have a WinForm control in a separate app domain than the host app domain. But with Crossbow, we enable you to have WinForms and WPF interoperate together. So we took that to the next level and said, I wonder, even though we don't allow you to have WinForms control, you know, user controls, et cetera, in a separate app domain than the host application, if we use the WPF and Crossbow wrapper to basically put a wrapper around that WinForm control, can I actually host that WinForm control in a separate app domain? And therefore, you know, now I can have isolation and have WinForms and WPF and start aging out my application, or having third parties writing WPF elements to my WinForm host application and things of that nature. And so we have a prototype here. If I just, you know, pop a few numbers on here, I'm actually going to run this that actually has, and that's just doing, you know, the RGB, you know, color scheme. Nothing too exciting. But the exciting thing is that this is actually a WinForm control in a separate app domain than the host application, and it's working over the add-in model and communicating across app domain to parent this to the WPF host application. So I have a WPF host in one app domain, and then I have a WPF wrapper, and it's very simple, it's one line of code, wrapping this WinForm control in a separate app domain being parented to a WPF application. And that's coming in beta 2, and I'm super excited about that.
What team did you work on before you came to the CLR team?
That's a good question. I actually was dev manager, and I actually changed roles recently. I'm currently a software architect. But I was a dev manager in a group called Trinity, which was responsible for Visual Studio tools for Office. And the applications there, you can kind of think of them as, instead of writing an application from scratch, you know, starting with a blank form, starting with Excel, you know, starting with Word, you know, word processor with all this functionality, and extending that application through, as an example, taking an Excel spreadsheet, which is a native application, it's basically an ActiveX control container, and enabling you to have managed controls, WinForm controls, right onto to the document surface. So basically extending that application through managed code. And then another thing that we did was a V1 product called Visual Studio Tools for Applications. And you can kind of think of that as kind of a managed equivalent of VBA. So if you think of, you know, kind of VBA where you start out with Word or Excel and you hit Alt-F11 and it pops up an IDE and you can record, you know, do some macro recording and some tweaking of code and things like that. So it's the deep integration with the host application to enable extensibility, you know, by everybody from, you know, tweaking the application to, you know, large robust applications and writing CRM applications, you know, for Outlook, for instance. And VSTA started to go out the door. It went out the door first integrated with InfoPath in Office 12. What was that? Used to the code name.
2003.
2003. Or no, it was 2000. Wasn't it 2005? So another, the recent one that just went out was, wasn't that tagged 2007, right?
Yeah,
2007. So as part of that, building that first version of that application, one of the things that was readily apparent was that large ISVs have a significant investment in their host application, in many cases in managed code, and they generally offer extensibility, many of them do, through like a COM object model or you know, some native extensions, etc. And they want to move into the managed world, in part because the first-class languages that are out there now in the tools and C# and VB to extend their host application are much more productive in the managed world. So where it's quite an effort to, you know, reauthor your host application and manage code, it's a whole other thing to take, say, your COM object model, which is, you know, kind of that middle layer that people are using to automate your application or services to your application by third parties and such, to move that middle tier to manage code so that you can have people, you know, using first-class languages like C# and VB.NET to automate that application.
Okay. Well, let's talk about extensibility. I mean, a lot of ISVs care about extensibility. Yeah. You know, what are the biggest questions you get on extensibility, and what are the solutions?
Yeah, so that's a great question.
Most commonly asked questions, is what I should have said.
You know, some of the most commonly asked questions are things like, how do I get isolation from, you know, this third-party add-in and my host application? You know, I don't want these add-ins to bring down my host application. And, you know, that's kind of generally the first question that's asked. And that kind of leads into more basic questions like, how do I do it? So I understood how to do it in COM and how, you know, how to build this object model and how to, and people understood how to use COM to automate that. But I want to move that to managed code, and what does that look like? You know, do I, you know, do I use TLVM and create a PIA, and you know, people use the PIA, or you know, what are my options there to move over? And especially in large applications, they want to know how can I incrementally do things. You know, it's too much to ask. You know, to rewrite your entire application. So what they want to know is like, okay, I have a significant investment. So how do I, you know, bring, you know, the managed, you know, automation and against this application and still keep that kind of interoping between my old code and then kind of aging out my older code in favor of, you know, using more managed code and making it more of a natural kind of seamless migration. And actually that kind of brings me back around to, as part of that whole extensibility story and building what we call the managed admin framework, I moved over from the Trinity team as part of moving over the charter for the system add-in components into the CLR team. I moved over and switched roles to be a software architect. And we have been building an implementation that we started out with in the VSTA product into the platform, into the Orcus release, which is coming out here pretty soon. Like beta 2 will be out.
So say I'm a very large ISV. I've got 15 million lines of code in this big application I've been writing for 10 years in C++.
Pretty standard.
How do I move that to managed code?
Well, that's a great question. So
it's going to take me years.
Absolutely. So obviously rewriting and reauthoring the whole thing is kind of out of the question. So my recommendation is kind of start aging out pieces of that application. So you know, maybe you want to start out, like we kind of talked about, you know, on the one end of the spectrum with, you know, your extensibility model and kind of aging out, you know, that object model or your legacy to COM, et cetera. And then I think that more and more of those pieces start to come down into your host application where you can reauthor pieces of it. So the idea being, you know, maybe pieces of your UI or, you know, your helper classes and things like that, you know, kind of building up your library of functionality over time. And then that kind of brings you into the, okay, now I'm in this mixed mode world where I have to interop down to, you know, my legacy code and what does that look like. And I think we do a pretty good job of interop. I mean, we have a very robust, you know, interop story to native code, you know, through PNVO, and then through COM, you know, we have a very good interop story there. But I think we can do a lot better. And in particular around, say, the forms, our form story. You know, if I have, you know, this native application, you know, do I move to WinForms, or if I've already moved to WinForms, or I've moved pieces of it to my, you know, to WinForms, you know, do I then move that to WPF? And how do I do that? And those are the general questions I get, is how do I move these pieces? And we're...
So what is your recommendation there?
My recommendation...
That's a hot potato.
It is a hot potato, and it's a tough problem space because you're mixing technology, and in many cases, you're mixing technology that wasn't aware of new technology, which, you know, now, you say the new technology should have been, you know, cognizant of the old technology, but you can't bring all that baggage across either. So it's a very difficult balance to handle that interop. I mean, so ideally, you could take, you know, pieces of isolated functionality and move that, you know, where you have, you know, subsystems or pieces of your UI that are, you know, they're kind of launched off and not part of your, you know, say your core UI or something like that. The one thing that I think that is fantastic that I've been an advocate for a long time that's coming out in Orcus is a feature called Crossbow, and it is enabling you to interop between WinForms and WPF. So for instance, you might want to start aging out your UI and say maybe make your outer Chrome, you know, in WPF, but you know, retain some of your investment in say WinForms or in your native code even. And we're getting a lot better at starting to give more guidance around, you know, how do I kind of interop to native code, and what does that look, you know, say I have MFC application, you know, how do I put like a WPF, you know, shell around that and then call through to MFC. A lot of that stuff is going to be continuing to get better in the follow-on version to Orcus, which we're calling Arrowhead. And we're trying to keep kind of a regular rhythm of releases that aren't so big that you have to wait, you know, 2 to 3 years for. So that kind of, you know, where I have, say, a WinForms host, and I start, you know, having WPF, you know, elements within that form, and kind of moving that over time until you're kind of aging out your application over time is my recommendation. So
when we talk about the CLR and we talk about the boundaries or edges in the CLR, I mean, what prescriptive guidance would you provide there?
That's a great question, and I think we need to do a little bit more there. I think in the past, we really kind of focused in on giving general guidance, you know, say, you know, here's our general guidance for performance and, you know, use String Builder. And that makes sense in a lot of cases, and it doesn't make sense in a lot of other cases. So most of the questions I get from ISVs are, you know, I'm seeing this behavior, it doesn't perform all that well. It was your recommendation, you know, why doesn't it perform well? And so the difficult part is that you have to say, what scenario is it used in, and how are you using it? And we're getting better at giving more guidance. I think we need to give a lot more guidance, especially in complex applications like ISVs. I mean, ISVs have a huge investment, and they spend years on applications. Whereas, you know, if I write a little departmental app or something like that, you can kind of throw it away over time, or it kind of ages out based on, you know, its functionality kind of going away. But with ISVs, you know, they need, you know, more guidance and more help understanding those edges and those boundaries, you know. And so we're getting better at giving more guidance. You know, I have a blog that, you know, talks about a lot of this. I solicit feedback from ISVs all the time. You know, I meet with them quite a bit. People send me, you know, documents of here are the things that we ran into in interop, or one of the things that we're also working on, for instance, is, gee, if I use interop, it does all this stuff for me for free, which is great. But if I wanted to do my own implementation or pieces of my own implementation to optimize that, because interop is kind of a generic, general, kind of all-purpose thing, so you can't be all things to all people and be highly performant in very specific scenarios. And so they want to know, what are you doing for me so that I can duplicate that behavior? And so we're working on, you know, what we'll first start out as kind of prescriptive guidance, probably some, you know, tools, some helper functions, and then eventually get lower and lower into the stack and be part and parcel of the platform itself.
Where will the prescriptive guidance be posted? You mentioned your blog. Is there another place that we could send us viewers?
That's a good question.
The BCL team blog?
Yeah, the BCL team blog. So you can, there's a number of places. So, and there are links for my blog, MSDN, you know, blogs.msdn.com/jackg, and there's a link to like the BCL team blog there, the CLR add-in team blog, which I'm a member of for the extensibility story, and then MSDN articles are a great way to look into some, you know, guidance. We have guidance on everything from, you know, engine to performance to memory, and I think, you know, blogs are awesome, actually. You can get some great information that you won't necessarily get, you know, from the help documents online. Like Mayoni, for instance, on our team has, you know, a great blog on GC. If you want to know about, you know, the GC, you know, her blog is fantastic. You know, or Rico Mariani's blog on performance. And they give you the inside information, you know, kind of what's going on under the covers. So I think blogs are great. You know, they do have the problem of it's not really consolidated and packaged, you know, like it would be for MSDN help. But certainly blogs, MSDN articles. We wrote a couple MSDN articles on the new add-in model that'll be coming in Orcus. Or actually, it's already out there, and, you know, in beta 1, beta 2 is imminent. And, you know, the other nice thing about blogs is they're pretty real-time. So, for instance, we pulled in a number of features we hadn't planned on doing in Orcus into the add-in model for, like, having add-ins, not just cross-app domain, but cross-process, which we hadn't planned on doing for quite a while. And I was pretty excited about that because I actually got to write that code. And it was a feature that we got from a lot of ISVs. And it showed up, you know, like on our blog, hey, here's some new stuff. So it's a great way to find new information. And you can email, and you can email anonymously, you know, to me to say, you know, ask questions and such. So it's a great way to get a hold of people that are actually working on the product.
Okay. Just a few simple questions here. How many people are on the CLR team?
Gosh, you know, I
don't know. Or is it the BCL team?
Well, that's a good question. So the CLR team encompasses the BCL team. So there's the core execution engine, there's, you know, say, engine, and, you know, people that work up with GC. There's so many. I've been on the team now for, I guess, about a year and a half or so, and the breadth of what we offer is pretty tremendous. And so it also includes the BCL team, the base class libraries. I think, gosh, you know, I don't know. I'll have to look. I think it's, I want to say, like, 150-ish. And then we have, you know, kind of our sister teams that roll up to the same general manager that own WinForms and other sister teams like WPF, you know, the people that own the web side of things like Ajax and so on and so forth. So we're all within a couple, you know, floors of each other. So we're, so the extension of our team is quite a few people. I don't know how many it is.
Right, this is Building 42 and... Yeah. Got everybody from server and tools here.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Was it spread across like a couple of buildings, or?
I think we have, you know, I can't remember. I think DLR, the Dynamic Languages team, which work on Iron Python and such.
I'm actually talking to Jim next week.
Oh, Jim Hoven? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's probably, I'm trying to think, because I think we even outgrew this building. So I think there's some people, some... you know, in some other places. And then, of course, there's, you know, tools, Visual Studio, and all the tools and such in another building, and the languages in another building. But I think we're all still in one building.
You mentioned Visual Studio extensibility, that includes the new Visual Studio shell that's mm-hmm. coming out. Mm-hmm. Is that part of your team now, or... or you're just providing guidance into the...
Well, it's kind of... So our team... We're kind of like the plumbers, and we build the foundation, and then the tools teams, you know, build on top of us. So, for instance, we do a lot of things for debugging, and most people, you know, think, you know, Visual Studio and Visual Studio debugging, but the APIs, a lot of the APIs that they you know, need to call into to get, you know, stuff to enable debugging is proffered up through our team. And so there's a lot of stuff that we do, you know, from an API perspective and functionality, you know, to enable the tools. So we work very closely with the tools team. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, some people kind of think that they're kind of independent, and it turns out that they're, you know, we're pretty tightly coupled, as it turns out. But yet, you know, because we support multiple languages and such, we have to be, you know, generic enough so that, you know, and anybody can take advantage of what we do, and, you know, we publish that stuff.
So when you're debugging the CLR, what tools do you use?
I use Visual Studio quite a bit. There are some things that other people use, or, you know, some of our profiling APIs and such. But primarily I use Visual Studio, you know, to step into, like, the BCL code and such. You know, there are other, you know, trickier things that people have to use for, like, you know, debugging the GC and things of that nature, you know, using, you know, traditional native, you know, native tools and such. There are a few other things out there that, like Vance, one of our architects, I think he did a couple articles on to use for kind of debugging the managed code and such, but I pretty much use Visual Studio myself. I'm not sure what the average, you know, person on the team is actually using.
Right.
I'm pretty sure we tend to eat our own dog food, so I'm pretty sure you'll find most people using, you know, VSTS, you know, for all that stuff.
Well, I know Emacs was one of the favorite editors on the Visual C++ team just as recently as a year ago, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I remember a million years ago when I used VI, but we used it because it was free. But
well, the Rubyists use VI on Windows.
Well, it's kind of like it's what you're used to more than anything. You know, it's what you cut your teeth on that you get used to that you end up using. You know?
Right. So just wonder if there was an inside track on performance tools that you used or collection that we could share with the viewers.
For performance in particular?
Performance and for debugging. I mean, are there...
Yeah. VS has a pretty rich debugging experience. And I can't think, you know, with IntelliSense and everything else, I mean, it's pretty amazing. From a performance perspective, that's a good question. Profiling is a great way. I think we're investing a lot more in the profiling APIs. Because the nice thing about profiling is it's kind of scenario based. So you run through your scenario and what your code does. You know, it starts this up, et cetera, and so on. And so the best way I found in any case to optimize in performance is to optimize around a particular scenario. So certainly from that perspective, the profiling, you know, would help quite a bit. To think about, like, what else we would do around that case. I don't know, I have to think about it.
Okay. What about, so Orcus, what are your favorite features coming in Orcus for low-level developers?
Well, the add-in models is, maybe I'm a little biased, but there's a ton of features in the add-in model. So the reason that it is so compelling is that it addresses so many issues that haven't been addressed so far in moving to managed code. For instance, the managed versioning issues. And ISVs in particular hit this quite a bit, where their host application needs to version independently of people authoring add-ins to their host application. So, for instance, think of some host application, whether it's Word or Excel or you know, Dassault's CATIA application, you know, CAD/CAM applications, or pick an application. And a third party, you know, extends that application. You know, they write a spell checker or maybe some SI, you know, is putting some stuff together, and they're automating that application or providing a service to that application. Well, it's some third party that's authoring this extension to this host application. So the host, you know, doesn't know how this thing is going to necessarily behave, and yet they need to be aware that, you know, that people are going to extend their application. And the difficulty there is these applications don't ship with the host application, so they're not tested with the host application, and they need to version independently, because let's say a customer buys, you know, some host application, and then they buy from some third party extensions to this host application. Well, if they get a new, and presumably the business is driving, you know, the demand for the extensions to this application. So, you know, how do I get my job done? Is I get this, you know, spell checker. Well, if I want to get a new version of this host application because there's additional functionality, and I install that application, it can't break that spell checker, those third-party applications. It needs to version independent of those extensions. And it goes both directions, where, you know, if I'm dependent on this extension, I can't have that hinder my ability to upgrade that host application. So the worst thing that would happen would be that, you know, nobody would buy your next version of your host application because of the dependency on this add-in, for instance, that I used to extend the application. So, and in the managed world, we've done a number of things for, you know, reducing DLL hell and, you know, enabling you to, like, you know, select specific versions of things and so on and so forth. But there are still a number of things that we, you know, needed to kind of continue making that story better for these versioning. And the add-in model enables you to do that. The add-in model gives you the ability to have these things, the add-ins run in isolation, either app domain isolation or process isolation. We just recently added in beta 1, so that I can run this add-in in a separate app domain. So my add-in is kind of isolated from other add-ins and from the host application, and I can unload that add-in, which is critical, because I don't, in a client or a server scenario, I can't necessarily just unload my host application in order to free up memory, or when I no longer need the service provided by this add-in, you know, unload that. And the only level of unloadability in managed code is at the app domain level. So everything in the app domain, in order to unload a DLL, I have to unload the app domain that DLL is loaded in. There's no DLL unload. And then there's lifetime semantics. You know, if I'm exchanging objects between these two, and both of them are running in separate app domains, there's currently one CLR per process, but there's no garbage collection that goes between app domains that understands, you know, that this reference to this other object that I've exchanged, you know, loses its reference and GC, you know, spans this app domain. So we've addressed a number of those things. And the ability to do discovery of add-ins. You know, how do I discover these add-ins? How do I activate these add-ins? How do I make it, and this is the key point, I think, is how do I make it simple for add-in developers to extend my application and to build this whole ecosystem, you know, where I'm, you know, an ISV that maybe extends another ISV's application like Outlook or Excel, where Office is an ISV, and how do I offer extensibility, and then how do I, you know, enable consultants and so on to write add-ins to my host application, and then make it compelling for that whole ecosystem, you know, to continue to benefit, where now I offer new extensibility in my host application and make it a rich enough object model where then third parties will continue to extend my application and drive upgrades. So.
Is the next version of Orcus making it easier for ISVs to ship their applications on .NET? I mean, a common issue in the past has always been that ship on .NET, now all of a sudden that computer's either got to have .NET available for download on the local network, right, or they've got to download from Windows Update.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of, we spent a lot of time on deployment. I think it's getting a lot better, in part with Silverlight, which is kind of the lightweight CLR that runs in the browser and cross-plat, you know, runs on Macintosh and so on, which we recently announced. And as part of that effort, we refactored, you know, some of the CLR so that the idea is that we don't want to necessarily be this monolith of, you know, I get, you know, 8 million gorilla bytes of stuff and I don't use WinForms, for instance. It seems kind of crazy. You know, it should be a pay-as-you-play kind of model where I can, you know, incrementally download this stuff. So we've started on that effort. It's getting better. It's a little bit better in Orcus. It'll get much better in Arrowhead. There's a number of things that we've done around, say, click once deployment and so on, even around the add-in model in Visual Studio Tools for Applications in VSTO. We've all worked with the click once team where now we can deploy DLLs, not just deploy executables through click once, which is great. So those third-party add-ins can now be click once deployed. So I think we're getting a lot better. There's some, you know, how much do I depend on, you know, the framework, and, you know, can I get pieces of that framework? We're getting a lot better. It's certainly better in Orcus. It'll get better in Arrowhead, the next version. But absolutely, deployment is, you know, something that, you know, is top of mind for a number of people, for everybody from, you know, IT, how do I roll this thing out? And we're also kind of changing our model in Orcus. We're very cognizant of ensuring, you know, that we maintain compatibility without getting into the whole red bits, green bits thing. You can kind of read about that on our blog, but we're, you know, very cognizant of that being out there. And then the other thing is that, you know, is how do we get it out there, you know, as part of Vista, you know, the 3.0 went out with Vista, and, you know, things of that nature, so that it's pretty much everywhere and you can kind of depend on it. So, deployment is a big issue and a big concern for ISVs, and mostly concerns for ISVs are concerns that their customers have. You know, it's like, yep, they don't mind moving to the latest stuff, but, you know, when their customer can't, you know, take the hit of, like, testing and deploying this thing, you know, that's where they get constrained, so.
Yep.
Hey Jack, as we close up today, is there anything you want to share on a personal note with the viewers?
You know, it's a great time to be a developer and a great time to be in the managed world. I think, you know, we're continuing with Silverlight, with, you know, improvements to Engine and to Perf, and, you know, with our forms package and so on. So I think, you know, it's a very compelling story that we've been working on, listening to ISVs in order to meet their needs in Orcus, and then following it onto Orcus and into Arrowhead. So I'm personally very excited that after, you know, years and years worth of work advocating for the ISVs, that we're actually doing more to address their needs and interop and all these spaces. So it's just a great time to be a developer and to be an ISV, frankly.
Thanks, Jack.
Sure. Okay.